Hey Wild Ducks. Welcome to our technology podcast. It's my pleasure to introduce the avatar of your host, Jerry Coleman.
Thank you, RJ. And welcome folks to the Wild Ducks podcast. Has this ever happened to you? You join a team, and as you start getting the hang of things, something feels off. Once you've built some confidence, you ask, why do we do it this way? In that moment, does your manager brush it off with, don't worry about it, or, it's just the way we've always done it? Or do they, if you're lucky, invite you to share your idea? As a technology leader, how do you invite innovation in, rather than locking it out? How do you craft a culture where work can be as rewarding as having cake on Tuesday? Well, Jerry's guest today is Elizabeth Biniak, a groundbreaking author and tech pioneer who has mastered the art of turning bold ideas into real-world innovation. And with that, I'd like to welcome Elizabeth
to the podcast. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Jerry. Great to be here.
Oh, great to have you here. So first question is, can you share with our listeners and viewers why you love doing those amazing things that you do?
There's a quote from Walt Disney about it's people that like to do the impossible. Those are the kind of people you want to hang out with. I use that one with my team a lot. The reason I like doing what I'm doing is because innovation is something that I think should be accessible to everyone, mm-hmm. but it often is not. Mm-hmm. We tend to glorify it and put it in this ivory tower and think you need a certain degree or pedigree or background mm-hmm. in order to be involved in corporate innovation. And if I can spend a little bit of my career blowing up that stereotype, I mm-hmm. consider that to be a success.
I love that.
I personally have never fit into that normal stereotype myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I've been successful. I managed to fail my way into success. So my team is used to me calling us all the Island of Misfit Toys
and
saying,
Rudolph.
You have to bring your own uniqueness to it. It's really being, the world needs more authenticity. The world needs more people who are being their own true selves and bringing all their unique backgrounds and history and thoughts and disseminating opinions. And I think that's what really makes true innovation.
And where did you start off? Where did you grow up and schooled and present? You know, can you fill in a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I'm originally from upstate New York.
Okay.
And they say you can take the girl out of New York, but you can't take the New York out of the girl. And I think that probably has stuck for sure. I grew up at a time and place where you speak your honest truth. And that's mm-hmm. what you should always speak.
Yes.
You should do it in love. But being honest, being clear, being concise is something I think was just ingrained in me as a kid. So
yeah, and that's also known as being a wild duck. So you're in the right place right now.
Yes, that also fits pretty well. So I think taking that, starting with that, that was just, you know, my childhood. And then like anyone, I think we all have our dreams and ideas of what we want to be when we grow up. And life never, ever goes according to those plans whatsoever. So I had my ideas and my thoughts, but I say I fell into technology and then fell into innovation. In hindsight, you probably could have seen it coming, but it did definitely seem like quite the right turn when I went into that realm. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it really comes from asking why and poking at things and saying, how can we do this better? And well, why have we always done it this way? I never thought this is the way we've always done it was a good enough answer. That usually begs the question, okay, is there a reason why we're still doing it this way? So I think my whole career path has largely been because of asking those questions and one opportunity opened to another. And somehow along the way, I found myself in a corporate strategy role. And mm-hmm. and in that, I started asking the question, why do we do it this way? And I had a wonderful boss manager at the time who was very tolerant and patient. Mm-hmm. And so rather than saying, go get back in your box, he said, do you think you can do it better? Show me. And mm-hmm. gave me a goodish bit of runway to go with that. And that's how I found myself leading a corporate innovation project.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Always some of the most fun I've had is working with corporate innovation because you get to step back and look at kind of not necessarily where you just are, but where you're going. And I like what I've heard you say in the past about curiosity and poking it with a stick, you know, being from, you know, upstate New York, you don't want to get too close to things. Because because they might bite, but otherwise you want to ask how and why. And I think corporate strategy is a great role. I also know how that translates that into, you know, getting things done that matter. So can you kind of continue to fill in some of the gaps? Now, you were in let's say a larger corporate strategy, and you decided to go out on your own at some point. Can you kind of talk about, like, without training wheels, or if that's a reasonable analogy, like how you learn to ride the bike, that's fine, but doing it outside of that corporate environment, can you share kind of like some of your mindset and how that progressed?
Yeah, I spent a good part of my career building a startup inside of a large corporation, which in some ways can be the best of both worlds, in that you have the financial backing and resources of a large organization, but you can move at the speed of a startup, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. But the other side of that coin is you can get the worst of both worlds and all the ambiguity that comes with a startup and all the red tape that comes with a large corporation. So it was a very interesting journey for me. And that prompted me to really sit down and reflect on what I learned through that several year process of leading a corporate innovation team and think about, do I want to do this again? Or do I want to do this on my own? Or do I want to help other people do this? And I landed on that third option. And that's where I am right now. That's why I branched out on my own. I'm focused on consulting, speaking, and writing, trying to help other corporate innovators who are trying to shake things up internally, try to do that journey a little bit easier, a little bit smoother than I did.
Okay. So speaking about branching out on your own, consulting and writing, I happen to know you have a new book out called Cake on Tuesday. So can you share with our listeners a little bit about that, especially as it ties into, you know, this thought around innovation and poking things, being curious and all of that kind of stuff. So there's like 25 or so lessons in that book. So can you share just maybe one or two or so of your favorites?
Sure. And that book is capturing a 7-8 year journey of leading the team that built what eventually ended up becoming the WebEx Hologram project out of Cisco. Mm-hmm. And it was not really meant to be a startup inside of a big company, but it became a startup inside of a big company. And the subtitle to Cake on Tuesday is 25 Lessons to Unlock Corporate Innovation. It is really focused on being, how can I consolidate those 8 years of experiences and learnings into something that is short, bite-sized, consumable. Mm-hmm. And my goal was to write something that could be read on a coast-to-coast flight.
Okay.
Try to distill 8 years into that. So in that, and then the book is broken down in 5 sections, each with 5 parts of it. The first 3 are all about starting. So that will give you some idea of where I biased my focus. Because starting is really hard. Getting momentum, going from concept to action or actionable idea is really, really hard. So I did bias the bulk of the book on that starting journey. The 4th section is all about persistence when it gets really hard and really rough. So that's a leading through the barren middle, section 4. And then the 5th part is all about insights from the rearview mirror, because there's things that when you're in the lesson, you don't always get it. But afterwards, on the other side, looking back, like, oh, that's what I was supposed to have learned.
Okay, Elizabeth, so let's start at the start. And I will share, as following similar tracks around technology, you know, big company and kind of a startup in a big company, I am always thrilled when I'm staring at a blank page. And maybe that's when I'm happiest, but also it's also terrifying. You have moments of terror because it's like, oh my gosh, it's not forming itself. I got to do something, especially when you have writer's block, you know, and so can you share like what on the starting, what are some of the advice you have on and
great? So I just had a flashback to one of my college professors talking about taking the scenic route to where I ended up. I thought for a long time I was going to pursue my master's in fine arts, and I took a lot of creative writing courses when I was in college. And I had this one professor who was amazing and very straight to the punch when he would talk about, if you're struggling writing, just sit down and write. And that sounds so annoying when you hear it as a struggling writer, but when you really think about that, it makes the most sense. To start, you just start. If you're having a hard time starting, just start. And his point was, even if it is literally doodles on a page or it's just nonsensical words, just start filling a page, because after a page or so, you will start getting into some rhythm. You'll start forming sentences. Something will come. The ideas will start flowing. And I think it's the same with innovation. A lot of times we wait till we get the perfect idea. And because of that, we never start. Whereas if you start, just start, whatever you have, however half-baked that is, you're going to learn so much on the way and you pick up those insights on the way that you end up finding your path as you go.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Sometimes a little bit of a healthy dose of don't be afraid of throwing things away and starting over. I mean, don't throw them away. Kind of move them to the side maybe is a better thing. Don't let them fall off the table, but at the side of the table. So Elizabeth, I'm not sure if this is like the persistent part or, you know, the middle of the journey, but what holds people back from being more innovative? And you've been on both sides of the big corporate culture. You've seen startups in corporate culture. You're now consulting. Is there a rule of thumb of what encourages people along that path?
I think what holds people back in corporate innovation is what holds people back in most other areas of life, which is simply fear. It's simple, but it's not easy. So I think identifying that labeling and what is the fear? Is it the fear of getting it wrong? Is it the fear of taking too long and losing our customer base? Is it the fear of looking wrong in the market? Is it the fear of we're going to be too slow, our competitors are going to be? What is that fear and where is that coming from? And if you can really narrow that down, it usually gives you a much clearer sense on where to start. Sometimes too, it can be a lot of fears can be based on assumptions rather than necessarily truths. So sometimes there's the, well, I can't take this risk because if I'm wrong, I'm going to get fired. I'm going to lose my funding. I'm going to lose my team, whatever the case is. And a lot of that is based on an assumptive fear rather than an actual truth that is going to come to fruition. So sometimes digging into the root of that is what is the fear that's holding you back? And is that valid or not? And starting from there, it could give you a good place to get moving.
So Elizabeth, people are surprised when I share them with them that I sometimes have imposter syndrome. And so if one of my fears is, what am I doing here? Why am I the right person to be working on this? And what license do I have to innovate? Is this something that you hear often? Is this one of the fears that is at the top of the list? And again,
100%. And we never talked about this, Jerry, but I'm glad that you brought this up because I have a future book I want to write sometime called Imposters. About this exact thing. Because the people with the biggest imposter syndrome are actually graduating PhDs. It's usually the people that have the most qualifications or stamp of approval from the academic world, if you will, are the ones that suffer the most from imposter syndrome. And I end up speaking a lot on the whole, on the freedom of admitting you don't know everything and how that is really refreshing, especially from a leadership perspective. If you are leading a team and you openly admit that you don't know everything, it takes that huge weight off of everyone else's shoulders feel like we're just trying to prove who's the smartest person in the room.
That's right.
And they realize, hey, if the boss just said they don't know everything, then that's an acceptable approach. I could admit that too, because I'm going to let you in on a secret. Nobody knows everything. So we're all kind of faking it a little bit till we make it. So when you pull that out into the light, it really opens up the opportunity to have true collaboration, truly build on each other's ideas. And that's when you get to the really cool ideas, the really breakthrough ideas.
So maybe one more point from the book. Can you share like another one of the 25?
Sure. I'll share one that I think has gotten the most traction recently, which is funny because you never know. You make 25 things and they all have equal weight to me. But I've had a lot of people comment on one chapter called Don't Be a Flat Squirrel. Okay. And I think the imagery of that one, I think you get a visual right away with that one. The chapter came from, the title came from a meme I saw a million years ago. All great things come from memes, probably. It said, on the road of life, is paved with squirrels who couldn't make up their mind. Don't be a flat squirrel.
Right.
My chapter is all about being a decisive leader. And I open it with a quote from Theodore Roosevelt about the best thing you can do is the right thing. The next best thing is the wrong thing. And the worst thing you can do is nothing. I think specifically in innovation, that's very applicable because you will never have all the answers. You are literally going into uncharted waters. So if you wait to make the right decision, you're never going to make a decision and you're never going to go anywhere. So simply taking action, I think action trumps everything. That's another thing my team got sick of me saying all the time. But take an action because you can always course correct. It's much easier to course correct than it is to start moving.
Okay. I usually like to end on the note of the future. So I happen to know you have a crystal ball. Can you wield its powers and share with our viewers and listeners where you see innovation going, you know, in the presence of all the technology we have, AI, et cetera.
Yeah. Oh, if only I did actually have a crystal ball. But if I'll pull one out, pretend. I would say there's two areas I think we're going to see a lot more of in the future. Probably neither of which people would rush to say these are the bright and sexy or bright and shiny. But usually the most necessary ideas are covered in a layer of dirt and grime. I think one is going to be much more access to curated information. So I think tools and applications that help pull together all the information that we can now access. The amazing thing about AI is it gives you so much access to information. But then the next problem to solve is, what do I do with that information? Right, how do I find it? How do I recall it? How do I sort it? How do I have it at my fingertips? So I think there will definitely be proliferation in tools and technologies that allow us to curate that information to make it more usable. The second thing is, I think we'll see a bigger focus on technologies that help bring people together. I think in the blow up of tech that we've had over the last few decades, we have become people that are much easier to reach each other and everyone feels more isolated. I think there's constantly tech can be dividing us. I think that's honestly, that's why the team and I focus on a WebEx hologram as a way to feel together when you are physically apart. Right now we're aware there's a screen in between us. So when you get to technologies that start removing those barriers and not feeling like technology, start falling to the background and start enhancing that human connection, that human experience and building a relationship, I think we'll see more of that as well.
Wonderful, Elizabeth. Well, I'd like to thank you for joining us here on the podcast. And I wish you the best success with your book. A great name.
Thank you, Jerry.
And I think a great message.
Thank you so much.
Well, that wraps up another episode of Wild Ducks. Elizabeth Biniak has shown us how asking why and embracing curiosity can truly drive innovation in even the most complex environments. And if you're craving more of Elizabeth's wisdom, don't forget to check out her new book, Cake on Tuesday, packed with 25 lessons to ignite corporate innovation. And speaking of books, Jerry also has a new book out called Think Artificial Intelligence, with all royalties going to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, so buying is really a way to give back. On behalf of Jerry Cuomo, IBM Fellow, and everyone here at Wild Ducks, thanks for tuning in. See you next time. Bye.